Tamata Wakatangi Hangi Kuwayo Wo Tamataya Tuli Puka Kapikimong.
If I go around telling people, don't buy, don't consume, obviously nobody's going to even listen to that. It would seem absurd to them. How can I not buy? How can I not consume?
Welcome to the Blue Continent Podcast. I'm your host, Brennan Pertzer, International Research Coordinator for the Blue Continent Alliance, the Blue Continent Podcast, and your Blue Continent.
What this program is about, this podcast, what makes it unique is finding people who have knowledge or expertise or have worked to address in a sustainable way a lot of global development issues.
My guest today is Shailaja Rangarajan of the Indian upcycling company Reimagined. The company empowers Indian women to turn recycled waste into top quality consumer products. It also serves social justice goals along the way. It's my pleasure to welcome Shailaja to the Blue Continent Podcast.
So I was reading a bit about your work. You've established our Imagined upcycling company, and I'd very much like to hear about it. And you've developed a bit of a profile as an entrepreneur and being featured on the TED Talk that I saw. I assume you've done one. Have you done more than one?
No, for now it's one.
Well, that's very impressive.
Thank you.
And I'm super excited to hear from you. If you can tell me about your company and how you came to found it.
Sure, I'd be happy to share that. So I am a first-gen entrepreneur, and no one in my family has ever been into any business of any type, for that matter. We are all a family of academicians, and I was working as a supply chain business consultant close to 15 years. While I was doing this, I got involved with solid waste management, where it was more about understanding the ways to segregate waste and how can the segregated waste be routed to the right destinations and ensure they are handled properly and processed correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So it started off as an individual journey, then went on to become a full-time voluntary role after I quit my corporate job.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go around from community to community trying to explain to them the ways and methods of handling waste responsibly.
Mm.
And I also started collaborating with the local municipality here to understand what is the infrastructure that is required to process this waste, what is lacking, what needs to be set up, etc.
Hmm.
It was around this time I also was like wading through heaps of garbage and landfills.
Yeah.
And then it struck me, why has this problem even come up?
Yeah.
The obvious question I asked myself was like, I don't remember seeing any of this as a kid. Because as I was growing up, there was no concept of waste collection at all.
What was your upbringing like? You said you're a first generation entrepreneur. I mean, in the scale of India, where was your family?
So I was born and brought up in the city of Hyderabad.
Hmm.
And it was a typical middle class upbringing where they would not just go randomly buy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the number of outfits per year were limited to two, one for the birthday, one for Diwali.
Oh, okay.
And we didn't really need more than that, in fact.
Hmm.
And what we invested were in books, in music.
Well, that's probably a very good investment, yes.
And most of the time was spent outdoors playing on the streets with other children.
Good.
And it's not like we had many toys. So one would have a bat or a ball or anything. Like it would all be like at the entire colony. The kids would come together and play together. So nobody had like a whole load of toys or gadgets were anyway out of question at that time. So this was all the 80s and 90s.
Okay.
And it was a very simple, happy-go-lucky childhood we all had. And we didn't have too many possessions as children as well. And we were absolutely happy. So there was no concept of waste at all. There was nobody coming to my doorstep to pick up waste because we never generated any waste.
Hmm.
Plastic packaging was non-existent then in India.
Interesting.
So everything that we would buy would actually just walk down to the local store, which would be like 10 minutes away, and carry our own bags, obviously. And he would just wrap everything in packets of newspapers and hand it over to us.
Oh, yeah.
It was a very, very, very simple lifestyle. In fact, even when we would buy oil, cooking oil or anything, we would always carry our own containers, which would be refilled.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that they still, in many places in India, will hand you something wrapped in a newspaper or something.
Yes, thankfully, it's still not an alien concept. But still, if you talk about urban India, this is fast fading. Because most of the shopping is done online, or even you go to these huge supermarkets or hypermarkets, right?
Mm-hmm.
The small local Kirana store, as they are called, the small end of street corner, like whatever store, small stores that you have, are still there. But then majority of the urban crowd opts for online shopping. It's more to do with convenience rather than awareness.
Okay.
So that's what got me thinking. How is it that in the last 10, 15 years, things have changed? When there was no concept of waste collection or waste generation, to this volume of unmanageable waste. And I asked myself, okay, here I am going about telling people to segregate their waste, route their waste responsibly, or actually put it in quotes. And are we really addressing the problem? It was a clear no. I realized that as long as we are generating this volume of waste, we are not even addressing the core issue, and we are just creating a bigger monster.
Yeah.
And my generation of parents, we go around telling kids like, oh, we had playgrounds, we had so many trees, the air was cleaner, etc. But then who is responsible for this? Not the kids, right? Obviously, it is us.
Yeah.
Our parents gave us a very simple upbringing, and they handed over to us a good livable planet.
Yes.
And we are handing over to our children a planet which they never even planned for. And the only root cause is this particular generation, where we have kind of caught up to this convenience-based lifestyle or aspirational living, where flaunting stuff, wanting more of everything, irrespective of need, just because we can afford it.
That is certainly the case.
And yes, and I realized, okay, being a waste management champion is no good. Ideally, people should consume less and throw away less.
Yes.
And if I go around telling people, don't buy, don't consume, obviously, nobody's going to even listen to that. It would seem absurd to them. How can I not buy? How can I not consume? So I said, okay, rather than going to people with the problem statement, why not give them an alternative? Is there a way that they can consume, but consume responsibly, where the impact that they have on the environment is far lesser compared to what they are doing right now? And that's when I started looking at waste from a completely different perspective. And the material that I used to see no longer seemed to be waste. I'm like, oh my God, can I just pull this bag and make something out of it? Why can't I just repurpose it? Oh my God, there is a chip in this wooden piece, but can't it be fixed? Okay, there is this outfit that has been thrown away with a small tear. So can't it be mended or repurposed?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what upcycling is all about.
That's pretty and cool.
So that's how the journey started in 2016 for me, where I launched Reimagined as an upcycling platform. I said, okay, let me try convincing more people to look at this alternative lifestyle. You do consume, but then consume without using up virgin resources at one end. At the same time, you are also ensuring that stuff does not end up in landfill or get shredded and burned. So it's a double benefit.
Sure.
If you opt for this kind of a lifestyle, and that's exactly how Reimagine came into being in 2016.
So it's
been a 4-year journey since then.
Okay. So in the past 4 years, you have built a team and you have designed a number of products that you guys can produce through through this process. Can you talk a bit, how big is your team?
So right now we are 33 people. When I say 33, primarily they're all the team members who handcraft the products for us, majority of them. So in fact, when I launched Reimagine, it was not as a production company. We were not manufacturing the products. I didn't have an idea of production. I didn't have an idea of even selling products. I don't have a sales background, and I'm pathetic at that. And
I read people saying that, that you actually had some pretty decent sales skills. I think you're
it's on the job learning for
you're,
me.
You're pretty good at it, I think I heard.
I'm on the job learning for me.
All right.
So even now when we participate in events, my team members are like, you know what, Shail, just step back. Because for me, it's more like, okay, why do you need two bags? Why don't you just buy one? My concept of minimal consumption still comes in there. And my team tells me, Shail, can you please step back? Let us handle this for you.
Okay. Well, what tell us about some of the products that, that are made from waste material. What are you selling?
So we work with varied range of products. So it can be like we work with denim. That is one of our waste materials. And we create quills, handbags, and pet bed covers, anything and everything. That is one range. We work a lot with fabric waste as well. We have created, again, quilts and even a small range apparel collection that we have launched. Now we are planning to create a full-fledged apparel range as well. And we have started working with wood scrap, and we are creating sustainable furniture from that, furniture and decor. And we have been working with tire tube waste, which is a post-consumer waste, trying to create a range of accessories and gifting products from those. And we work a lot with bottles, glass bottles, and create home decor and interesting gifting pieces from those. So, and anything and everything, because my belief is nothing needs to end up in a landfill. And what I have asked myself is, okay, I need something. Can I have an upcycled alternative for this? So that's also a reason why we have not limited ourselves to one material or one product.
No, you wouldn't want to do that.
So from the time I wake up till the time I hit the bed, what are all the products that can be replaced by an upcycled alternative? So that's been like the core principle of the enterprise. And that's how we have continuously experimented with materials and designs as well.
I've seen more people working in this similar ambition, the same goal. And one of the ways I was just, when you mentioned denim, it occurred to me, there's a company in Holland that will not sell you jeans. They rent you jeans. And every other month or maybe every season, you'll turn your jeans back into the company. And then they will be prepared to take them apart and redesign them into newer jeans, but trying to utilize as much of the denim as possible. And they'll give you another pair that, that is cool for the next season, whatever that is. So it's a way to recycle fashion, which, you know, you never really own them. You just rent them.
That's really interesting, because it was kind of shocking for me how the denim market operates here. I came to know about it only when we started working with denim. I didn't know that denim, which is sitting on retail shelves, has a shelf life. Because that was, I was surprised. What do you mean by shelf life? That's when the retailers told us that all the big brands that keep manufacturing jeans, they keep sending new stuff because they need to sell those.
It's a production line that has to keep
moving, correct. And so the retailers are forced to discard the denim that has remained unsold on their shelves for a certain time period. And then what happens to that? So thankfully in India, there is an unorganized sector. So there are guys who buy that pair of unsold jeans, rip off the label and sell it on the pavement at dirt cheap prices.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Yes. And if it doesn't get sold there, it reaches the aggregator, the waste aggregator, who shreds it apart.
Mm.
So I was surprised. I thought denim lasts forever. Like, at least I have been wearing my pair of jeans for I really don't know how many years.
Right.
But this was a revelation to me.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Fashion itself is very foreign to me. And anyone who would see me dressed can attest to that, you know. But no, it's very, very interesting. Supply chain. So you studied and worked in supply chains for so long. It must have been so strange to you to realize that there were entire swaths of waste that nobody had any use for at all. You know, that must have been quite the revelation. Because you're like, okay, and then where does it go? What? It's thrown away? How does...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really amazing when you can, you know, do exactly as you're saying, create some use, some value for someone from something that has been just cast aside. I was, one of the most recent stories that I covered was in Singapore, and I was talking to a chef who ran a restaurant, and he said that one of the things that he would do would be to pick up all kinds of rotting fruit from the restaurant or from the the markets and the street markets. And what he would do with the rotting fruit is he would feed it to this black soldier fly larvae, and then the soldier fly would then turn it into a great compost that they could then use to plant, because they grew all their own food outside the restaurant. So you take something that was given for free and is you created value from it. And that's exactly the type of upcycling, I think, in a very different medium, but that's what you've been doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, it's all about understanding our own footprint, and at an individual level, try doing whatever we can to ensure we have minimal negative impact on the environment. It's not rocket science, actually,
no.
Because when you look at the problem in totality, it will overwhelm anybody. It's like, oh my God, what can I? This is not something I can handle. But what I always keep talking about is this imperfect sustainability. Let's not aim for being the perfect person like that.
No.
Let's not aim for that. At least try aiming for the small things that we can try adjusting or changing in our own consumption pattern and stick to that.
That's a good.
And over a time period, right, you will actually see the cascading impact it has is phenomenal.
Okay.
Just make a beginning at one point and you'll not even know that over a period of time, you've actually picked up so many other habits unknowingly because your mind has started working in the direction of, okay, do I really need this? Oh, do I need to throw this away?
Yeah.
Okay, I need to give something. Is there something else I can give instead of the regular stuff? That's how the mind works anyway.
I was going to ask you, what is the impact? I mean, how much... If you've been able to measure how much impact that the work you've been doing has had over the past 4 years.
So if you talk about the volume of waste that we have repurposed, it's close to 100 plus metric tons of different types of waste.
Wow.
Now with the production team also scaling up, we hope to kind of double that number year on year. And that's exactly when we'll actually start making a bigger impact. And people are waking up to this reality. And so over a period of time, we have kind of built up credibility and people realize that upcycle doesn't necessarily mean poor quality.
No.
In fact, looking at our products, people can't make out that it's upcycled. But we make it a point to tell them how it has been made, what it is made out of.
Hmm.
So yeah, we hope to increase that year on year. That's what we are set out.
Your team, you said, had grown to over 30 women, right?
Right.
And can you talk about what that opportunity has meant for any of the women that are working for you? How it has helped them professionally or with their domestic life?
Oh yeah, sure. Well, in fact, when I started off Reimagined, I never had the idea of sustainable livelihoods on my mind, to be frank.
Mm.
The focus was primarily upcycling and how to go about it. And as I said, right, I don't have experience of setting up production units or handling this kind of work and everything.
Mm.
So it just started off as a marketplace in 2016, where I kind of made some 70 to 80 cold calls randomly to people
mm-hmm.
who were doing some kind of upcycling more as a hobby,
mm-hmm.
Not really as an enterprise. But I felt, okay, that would be a good start to even test the market, because upcycling as a concept is not really big in India.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just plowing in my personal savings there into the enterprise. So I really wanted to know what I was getting into.
Mm-hmm.
So it started off as a marketplace with maybe some 50 odd products online, and trying to explain the concept to people and getting them to buy some small products.
Yeah.
That gave me an idea about what kind of price points will work, what designs will work, what do people even expect. And it also gave me a good idea about the quality issues that arise, because things were not under my control.
Was it?
So after 1.5 year of, sorry?
Was that difficult? Trying to deal with quality control.
Of course, it was. It surely was, because here I was trying to make upcycling a lifestyle alternative, and people were doing it as a hobby, right?
Mm.
So the difference is like there we are poles apart. What I set out to accomplish versus what they are trying to do.
Mm.
So can't really blame them, and. And I realized what should go into making a product and what is it. And I don't know, maybe because of my finickiness to detailing over through my, that maybe that's my OCD probably. and I was not willing to compromise on the quality and the finish as well. And so after 1.5 years of understanding all this, I was toying around with the idea of setting up the own production unit. And my friend, from a completely different city, Kolkata, reached out to me.
Mm.
She's an artist and she teaches kids who are special kids with different levels of disabilities.
Uh-huh.
So this is a school that is run for free because these children come from extremely poor backgrounds. So they really can't afford a regular school.
Mm.
And she would see these mothers who would accompany the children every morning. And for the 3-4 hours that the children are inside the school, the mothers would patiently sit outside waiting for the classes to end and they can take them back home. So even the commute wasn't affordable for them. So they would actually sit outside.
Wow, that's cool.
And that's when she reached out to me saying, Shail, I have no idea. You are doing something. That's what I came to know. Now I have no idea what you're doing. Now, is there a way we can do something for these women to augment their income?
Wow.
I said, for me, it was like just connecting the dots. Yeah, I was like, okay, I need a team. They need work. Let's put this together.
Wow.
And so these were women who came with the zero skill set. They had not really worked anywhere or not been trained on anything.
Hmm.
So that's how the first team came together. And we started training the women on stitching. And it was my scatterbrain ideas like, do you get denim waste here?
Yeah.
And why denim? I don't know. That fabric has always fascinated me, probably. And so we sat around like figuring out where to source the denim waste. And we taught the women the basic tailoring, how to even put a straight line stitch on a sewing machine. It started from there.
Mm.
And that's how. And for 6 to 7 months, not a single product hit the market because I was not happy with the quality. I said, no, reject, 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 reject. To the point they were really frustrated, saying, will we ever sell anything? I said, we will, the day I'm convinced about what you guys are making.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah. And, yeah, it was a lot of hard work and frustrating moments, everything. But today, they take pride in what they create. Hmm. We have not had a single product rejected for quality so far. In fact, we have never had an order coming back to us.
Huh.
Never. Yeah. So no customer has returned our product saying, oh, I'm not happy with this. They always buy it online with the fear that, okay, it's upcycled, creating from waste.
Yeah.
Let me see. But when they eventually get the product, they have always had a very positive feedback for us.
Hmm.
And when I pass it on to the team, that's what gives them the proud moment. And today, they have come to a situation through their earnings that, like during the lockdown period and everything, like most of the husbands lost their jobs as well.
Mm.
The women were the primary breadwinners for the family.
Oh, wow.
Today, they are able to send their other kids as well to school.
Mm-hmm.
They have managed to afford a home loan to buy a home for themselves. And they are able to afford the medication for the child. All this they were living without.
Wow.
And things like when I first met them, they would not even have the eye-to-eye contact. They were so beaten down in life. And it really struck me because so many things I've taken for granted in my life. And here I see these women who didn't even have their own identity.
Mm-hmm.
And today, they talk about their work with a lot of pride. They take so much pride in it. And they really don't go around begging people for opportunity. They have really earned it.
Hmm.
And so that's the reason we also don't sell sob stories. Yeah, it has been tough for them. It's okay. But look at them today. There is joy when they come to the unit. They laugh a lot more than, I don't know, were they even laughing earlier like this? So they have fun when they work. So when people ask, like one of the events, like we have this flea market as well, right? So one of the women was standing at the counter and selling the product. So one guy asked, oh, this is made from waste. Why is it so expensive? I'll get a cheaper version here when I go there, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Earlier, they would have just not challenged that outlook. And here I see this lady telling that person, you know what? Do you have an idea how much effort goes into making this?
Yeah.
Do you know what difference it has made to our families by working?
Hmm.
Oh, I don't think I need to buy your product. She said, she just shot back. Oh, what makes you think that we are selling you this product anyway? We sell it to people who appreciate it anyway. And I loved her self-confidence.
Yes.
So 2.5 years of working and creating these products has changed her as an individual.
Absolutely.
Now, this was not something, frankly, I set out to do, but I realized, oh my God, this is much more than what even I had planned. These women are phenomenal. So the social impact that we're talking about is
it's huge.
Much deeper than I had even anticipated. So the second unit in Odisha, actually, it's a team of 15, 11 men and 4 women. And if you go to remote parts of India, you will not find women stepping out of their homes, really going beyond the boundary of their village to do anything. This is the first time women there are actually joining forces to work.
That's very impressive.
So this is a social impact that is happening. It's not like we are consciously doing it. Like, okay, this is what we set out to do.
Sure.
But we are happy. But yeah, when we do choose to set up a unit, we ensure that there is a social element to it. Are we able to make a difference to at least a few lives? Well, people ask, oh, social impact. Oh, it's just 30 odd member team. Why not 100?
Wow.
For me, the primary thing is it's 100 plus metric ton with 15. With 33, we are looking at doubling it.
Wow.
So we don't want to lose focus on upcycling. Upcycling remains our core.
Right.
But the way we do it, we want to ensure that there is a social angle, which is like a very strong foundation to our enterprise. So, and the story continues.
Some of these women, they become the main breadwinners, right?
Right.
In as a result of COVID, to some extent, I see that you even are selling some masks on.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
So
that was again that was by chance, in fact.
Hmm.
So we were not really into making masks. So we make so many products and everybody was into making masks. Hmm. It so happened that when the COVID crisis started, a week before the lockdown, I kind of closed the unit myself saying, you know what, let's not put the people at risk because they're all mothers with small kids. Sure. So let's not take any risk. Let's close the unit till this crisis passes. Now, I really did not plan for 2 months or 3 months of lockdown, but it happened. And it was around the same time we had a bulk order from HelpSee from the US, New York.
Mm.
So they had requested us to make a few foldable shopping pouches for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we had all the cut, the cutting was done, everything was done, but the stitching was yet to be done.
Hmm.
And thankfully, we had a week before the lockdowns, so we said, you know what, all the tailors, they managed to go back to their villages. And these cut pieces were also carried by them. They said, okay, we will sit at home and stitch it, no problem. We had no clue when we will ship it, though. And so they started and they stitched all these bags, so it helped them. And it was like one tailor who took all this, and in his village there were 8 more tailors.
Mm.
So we kind of distributed the work to these tailors through which they could earn some money, even with no other work happening.
Mm.
And it was around the same time that HelpSee reached out, hey, do you guys make masks? I said, we can, it's not like we can't. So I asked this main tailor saying, okay, are you guys up for making masks?
Yeah.
He said, yeah, there are many people making masks. We can do that too. So the only available material there was only some fabric waste at that time. So they said, okay. So the tailors in the village again got involved sitting and stitching these masks. And we created our first set of masks for HelpSee.
Oh.
And I said, okay, now that we are making masks, people said, oh, I saw your post about masks. Will you also sell them here? I said, okay, you guys want masks? Or masks. So that's how it started. Somehow, nothing in Reimagine has been this really planned effort. Things have just kind of come together.
Yeah, and they just kind of naturally develop.
Yeah, we went along with it. So masks also is something that we make now. And they're fast selling for us.
We're
constantly making more and more.
So you mentioned that you do have, or you have had some American clients. Do you have the ability to do small orders to America and other countries, or is that something that can only be done on a bulk purchase?
So small orders we do make, but what I have also noticed is if I'm shipping one piece to any country, be it the US or UK or Australia, right? The shipping charges are as much as the product cost.
Right.
Now, not all customers are willing to pay that, unfortunately.
Mm.
So, yeah, now we are looking at partnerships to resell the products.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't make economic sense for me to send one piece. But if somebody is buying 10 to 15 in bulk, I would call even that as bulk because every piece is handmade, so it's not mass produced, right? So 10 to 15 pieces together, it makes more economic sense as well.
Oh, for sure.
Because end of day, as a consumer, it's not fair to expect customers to pay double the price or triple the price.
No.
It's not practical. Why would a customer buy something at a very steep price?
Only if they want to, but at the same time.
So looking at reselling through partners.
Yeah, I was thinking getting someone to make a purchase in the States of, you know, 100 of something and then reselling it from there. And can you tell my listeners exactly how they can find out more information about the products and your company?
So it's very simple. Check onto our website, www.reimagine.com. And all our product ranges are available online. And so they can directly reach out to me, drop in an email to me at Shailaja, that is Shailaja at reimagine.com. So for international people, I'm just an email away. So feel free to connect with me anytime.
Well, that's great. And Reimagined is Reimagined.
Music for today's podcast comes from the Indian jazz trumpeter Chick Chocolate. from Goa, and the Indian percussionist Trilok Gurtu, and Norseman Jan Garbarek from their Living Magic album, and also some of Gurtu's incredible 1994 performance at the Frankfurt Jazz Festival with Joe Zawinul.
And of course our theme music, The Lone Ranger by Quantum Jump.
Thanks everybody for listening to the Blue Continent podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And we hope you'll subscribe and join us again. Tell others about us. This podcast is also available in a raw video format found on our Blue Continent Alliance Facebook page. If you'd like to see our mini documentaries from around the world, visit the Blue Continent YouTube page today. Thanks again for listening. Take care.